The following episode of How Did This Get Made is sponsored by LegalZoom. They're helping keep the show free. If you go to LegalZoom.com and enter the code EARWOLF, you'll get a discount and 100% of what you spend there comes directly back to the show. LegalZoom is the best place to help with your legal needs. They're not a law firm, but they provide self-help services at your direction. For more information on how to support this show and the rest of the EARWOLF podcast network, go to EARWOLF.com/insider.
Bones are crushed, heads are chopped clean off their bodies, people are gouged with scissors, knives, and even chairs, men are exploded by rocket launchers, and not even dolls are safe. One film has all of this. We saw Punisher Warzone, and you know what that means.
Now it's time for How Did This Get Made? We're gonna have a good time, celebrate some failure, not just be a hater, cause you know you wonder, how did this get made? Let's wallow in the mediocrity of subpar art. Perhaps we'll find the answer to the question, how did this get made?
Hello, people of Earth, and welcome to How Did This Get Made? This is a very special episode. I am Paul Scheer. I'm joined by always June Diane Raphael. How
Hi,
are you,
Paul.
June?
I'm good. How are you?
Jason is away this week. We don't have him, but we have two very special guests in studio. We have Patton Oswalt with us today. Hello, Patton.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Patton.
Thanks for having me on.
We have a very special guest, the director of Punisher Warzone, Lexi Alexander, is here. Welcome, Lexi. How
Hello.
Are you?
Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, thank you for coming.
We have to say that this movie is awesome. Punisher Warzone, if you haven't seen it, I was made familiar with it with Patton. You wrote an essay about this movie.
I wrote a blog post the night I saw it. I ran right home and immediately wrote. It was one of those things where I had to go write about it immediately.
Because it is unlike, it's the action movie that you want every action movie
yes.
to be. It has every, the. It first of all, it's beautiful. And it's like, I mean, it looks amazing. It looks like a comic book. Like, you did this amazing job with this film. And it is one of the most graphically intense,
yeah,
visceral
at
experiences.
At one point, well, Paul and I were watching it together, and I have a hard time watching violence, so I did spend a lot of the time with my hands over my eyes.
Yeah.
And not to give away too much of the plot, but when Looney Bin's Jim is about to take the heavyset orderly out,
yeah.
I couldn't watch that.
Actually, he's going to get his applesauce back.
Yes, yeah. He's got to get his applesauce back. I couldn't watch it, and I said to Paul, I had my hands over my eyes. I'm like, Paul, what is happening? I can't watch this right now. He goes, oh, nothing. He's eating him.
So for those of you who don't know, the Punisher is a Marvel character who basically is like a badass version of Batman. I mean, if you have to describe what he does, he is Batman without the cape, the mask. He's just a Batman with a shitload of guns.
Yeah.
And really pissed off that instead of his parents being killed, his wife and children were killed. And he goes out to right the wrongs, punish the wrongdoers.
To be the Punisher, exactly. Yeah. I think he's the kind of guy that if the Joker were his nemesis, the Joker would go, this guy's really nuts.
Yeah.
I don't know what is wrong with him.
His name's Frank Castle, not based on the ABC series Castle.
No, it's not based on Castle.
No, not
and
at
also,
all.
Also not based on Rosalian Isles.
No.
Different.
Well, I mean, this is the third Punisher movie that's made. There was the one with Dolph Lundgren.
Yes.
Back in the late 80s.
Correct.
With Lou Gossett Jr. Then they did the one with Thomas Jane.
Right, which and John Travolta.
And John Travolta, which I very much enjoyed. But the Thomas Jane movie, because the Thomas Jane movie really embraced all of the Garth Ennis comics and the dark. Garth Ennis I believe he's a British writer. He might be Scottish. And they gave him the Punisher books, and he really added this kind of grand guignol, satiric, crazy level of violence. And the first movie really embraced that. And then Lexi's movie treated that movie as a door that they needed to go through on a rocket sled. Like I tend to go see every comic book movie, whether, you know, and the trailer for this one looked really good. And a bunch of my friends went to the Chinese theater because they released this in December. Near Christmas time.
Christmas time. Academy Awards season.
Academy Awards season.
Which, you know, when they told me, because the date was supposed to be around Labor Day,
yeah.
You know, and when they told me, oh, we're going to push it 2 months, and I thought, why? It's done. It's ready.
Yeah.
Oh, no, this, and, you know, they told me it's a huge compliment because you have to know, in December, it costs twice as much to advertise, you know,
because
the Academy Awards. And, you know, I mean, I've not been around for 20 years. This is my first studio film. I'm like, wow, look at how much they like this movie, you know? In the meantime, probably, you know, my agent's already thinking, oh, she's fucked, you know? So
this is done. But then, yeah, and so we all went and saw it at the Chinese theater. And after the first 5 minutes, we all looked at each other and said, okay, this movie is going for it. I wish I had a better phrase, but this movie announces in the first 5 minutes, you fanboys want a dark, violent Punisher movie.
Yes.
Well, your prayers have been answered.
We are in it to win it.
It is the most satisfying opening. I mean, I think it's the quickest time to decapitation out of any film I've ever seen. And it's that opening scene. You're psyched. It is. It's like, whoa. Like, that's the opening scene is like most films' closing scene.
It is. It almost like your movie was announced. I know that we've seen other movies' finales, so we're going to start with the finale, and we're going to keep topping that.
And what I loved about it, too, is it doesn't reboot the franchise. It's like...
new.
Punisher has been out. The Punisher has been so violent that the guy who is working with the Punisher, he has a basement full of just the deaths that the Punisher has doled out. Like, literally a basement full of just DOA.
I also love, though, that guy, the detective. Soap. Yeah. Because he's working out of his basement. He's leading this task force of one to find the Punisher. But... he has no office space, but he has put up a little degree.
His degree is on the wall.
I love that detail.
Well, I also like that there's a subtle inference that, I hope I'm using the word inference right, that the police have almost gotten not so much tired of the Punisher, but, well, he is killing a lot of guys
that we can't catch.
They clearly put the dumb, like, not the dumbest, but like the least effective guy on the case. Soap is not going to bring down the Punisher.
No, and not at all.
I like that my favorite moment, too, is that Soap trying to be like a hero when they go to break into, I forget her name right now, they go break into Julie Benz's house. Like, he puts on a little hat. Like he's everyone's all decked out and like, look, I like that Soap character a lot, and I just love that he put on his little hat to go and to do backup.
Can you take us through, Leslie, your journey?
Well,
with all of us?
I think the most interesting part about the whole process was probably how I got to do this film, you know, because I always say to my friends, and I have to make sure this comes off right, because I certainly was never of the opinion that I was this great director who should be doing Schindler List type movies, but the way I broke into the business and got my foot in was I did this short film on Super 35, and it was 40 minutes long, and it was nominated for an Academy Awards, the first thing I did.
Oh, wow.
And I was sitting
first
there.
Academy Award.
I was sitting there at the Oscars, and I always say to people, well, just so you know, while I was sitting at the Oscars, I wasn't thinking, I hope I get offered the third remake of Punisher, okay? So, I just don't want people to think I didn't like the whole comic book thing. I kind of was like, you know, here I was, and then I did another kind of independent film called Green Street that was something I wanted to do, and I thought, okay, now I'm set. I showed everybody I can handle a film on a budget.
Green Street Hooligans, by the way, is an amazing film. Super gritty.
Oh,
you should go see that. But anyway, sorry.
And so then I was kind of considered like, you know, I would say I was in the league of, you know, young directors that could be hot big directors one day if they get the right studio film. So you go out there and you get these scripts sent, and they nothing like you wish them to be ever.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I mean, anything from, I remember seeing one of the first A-Team scripts, Fast and the Furious 8, and the Kraft 5, and the, you know, I mean, and here's the thing, there's not enough projects for all the great directors, and I'm talking about A-list directors who can't get work, so they come down and do these mediocre things. So finally, after 2 years, my agent said, you have to do something, you know? And so this came, and, you know, I was like, I don't know anything about comic book movies. Yeah. I know Tintin, that's it, you know? Like,
and a
little European thing called Asterix and Obelix.
Oh, of course.
You
do
know
that,
That was my comic book.
Right.
So I remember passing, then they said, just meet with the executive. I met with the executive, and he, I guess, really liked me, and he said, well, tell Lexi to come back and meet everybody and the Marvel people, but tell her to prepare a little bit more. Now, that should have been a clue to them, okay?
So had you prepared anything?
It sounds great, you know? Like, I didn't want it, you know?
Right, yes. So then it
goes on, okay? So now I'm set for this big meeting. All the Marvel guys, Gale and Hurd, all the Lionsgate guys, and I do prepare just because I didn't want my agent to think I'm not, you know, have to...
For sure.
It's a relationship.
You
want
to have a good meeting to get other meetings, just so they go, hey, she's great.
She's
like,
correct.
Maybe not for this project, but she's smart. Yes. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
Now, here's an interesting thing that I don't think I've ever told anybody publicly, okay? the meeting is set the day after that Virginia Tech guy goes and shoots a million people.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay? Not only that, I happened to watch the one newscast that showed his room. And what's in that room?
Oh, no.
A Punisher poster. So I called my agent and my manager and I said, I cannot go into this meeting. I cannot, because now I had prepared the whole thing about he goes in, he kills a million people. I'm like, it's a marathon on the news. I'm not going in to talk about it. And my manager goes, you know, I think they're going to respect you for that. Let's just reschedule, okay? So the thing gets rescheduled for another week, and I keep thinking, I hope they go to somebody else. I go into the meeting. They do offer it to somebody else. Right. They offer it to the guy who did Rounders.
John Dahl?
Yeah. That's him. Yeah. So I'm like, yes, okay, great. John Dahl is going to do this. I'm going to go look for my other studio film that's going to be fantastic.
And were you looking for, like, you were looking for action movies?
For
like?
Example, I wanted to do Wanted.
Okay,
you know,
okay.
You know, that's one thing awesome, I went up for. Unfortunately, I was in Europe at the time, so the only way I could present to them was over phone, which I guess wasn't a great meeting.
Right.
They didn't hire me. But these are the type of movies that, you know, I wasn't saying I'm not doing action, but... Yeah. You know, I wanted it to be...
Wanted was... Yeah.
I wanted to like it and have a vision.
Right.
So, John Dahl wants $1 million, okay? And Lionsgate says, no, we want one of those cheap directors that works for nothing because they need a studio movie. The thing comes back to me. And the funny thing is, my agents who've never made a mistake like that, okay? The agent and manager email each other and copy me by accident, which they've never done, which is a conversation.
It's like,
oh my God, I think she's not going to say yes. John Sacki said, we're bringing it to her, but she's going to have to say yes because he's fighting for, I just talked to her. I don't think she's going to say it. Right. I think we're in trouble. And I'm like, guys, I'm on this email.
I'm right here, guys. I can hear you.
And so they called me and said, okay, sorry, but what do you think? And I'm like, and then they did the one line that kind of did me in. They said, look, Lexi, no woman has ever directed an R-rated comic book film. This could really, you know, you could break through the glass ceiling, and there's a lot of little girls who thank you for it if you finally can get women. And to be honest, you get to me. Yeah. I want girls to grow up and think that they can be film directors and it doesn't have to be Lifetime movies.
Yeah.
I want girls to grow up and know they can do anything. And to be honest, it's not like that in the film industry
yet.
We don't have enough examples. There needs to be a female Quentin Tarantino, in my opinion, a female James Cameron, you know?
Yeah.
There's one right now, Catherine Bigelow, you know, and even she after K-19 had a tough time coming back.
I also love when people are like, well, there's Catherine Bigelow. It's like, that's
okay,
one.
Yeah.
That's one person.
You know?
I mean, Point Break was
Catherine
amazing.
Bigelow is like what the dumb people say to show that, oh, I know about female
directors.
Yeah,
there's
like,
one,
Catherine Bigelow.
One person.
Yeah. Okay, you don't know what you're, you know, everyone knows her name.
Right.
She's great, but there's other people.
And
nobody ever asks, like, what has she done?
Between like Hurt Locker and,
K-19. It's like, what was it? Did she get offers? Did she not? Mm-hmm. I kind of have a feeling about it. I think she fought very hard to get the Hurt Locker done. It wasn't like, you know, we were just talking about another director, we're not naming him, but who you know, can bomb a million times, he'll still get offers. I don't think, same with Catherine Bigelow.
No, so, I think you're right.
So you
to
can't
me,
get up to bat.
When they pulled that, and they probably had a conference call before and thought, we know exactly how to get to like,
we'll
so
care.
When they, I said, okay, done, we're doing it. And I also thought, to be fair, you know, I kind of bought this whole, you have to do one for them so you can do others. I mean, it worked for Zack. You did Zack Snyder, The Dawn of the Dead. You know, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of directors who do one and then they do the next bigger one. And the better they do, the more. And so I thought I have to do that. Okay. Now, that also set me into a whole state of mind of, oh shit, I cannot fail, I cannot fail, I cannot fail. Yeah. Not a good place to be creative. Okay, never make decisions out of fear. But at least I worked very hard on saying, okay, now I need to know everything about The Punisher, okay? I need to know everything. I need to know everything about the other two movies, and I need to know everything the fans did not like about the previous one.
Yeah.
And that was my education. I went to Punisher school. I contacted... You know, the first comic book that
they sent... I sent my transcripts. They waitlisted me. I was so hurt.
It's a correspondence course.
I had to go to Blue Beetle University. It's so embarrassing.
I took a minor in the tick.
Marvel sent me a big box of comic book, Punisher comic books. And the first thing I opened, a guy threatens another guy. And he says, if you tell on me, I will feed you your balls in a cup and you have you eat them or something like that, okay? And the next thing you see, the guy with his balls in his cup and you see the testicles. Now, this is the first thing I see. And I laugh out loud. Yeah. I'm like, okay, this is like ridiculous, right? Yeah, it's ridiculous, violent. It's like, it'll never happen in real life.
Yeah.
And between the Virginia Tech guy, it kind of like, it's okay. It's not shoot them up, okay?
Right.
It's ridiculous violence.
Yeah.
And I contacted these guys on the online called the Global Punisher Army. Okay. They had a website. And I said, hi, I'm doing the next Punisher movie. I know I'm a girl, but just stick with me here for a second, okay? Mm-hmm. And they were so educated and so polite. You know,
their heads must have exploded.
Yeah. I know. They finally got to weigh in on it. Every fan wants that.
Yeah. Well, you know what, though? They surprised me. They were they're from heart of America, very polite. I think the head guy was from Oklahoma. And, you know, I mean, they kind of helped me. So I asked them.
That all lines up.
I asked them questions. I came back to Marvel and Lionsgate and I said, we're doing this. We're like embracing the B-movie ridiculousness, right? We're not doing PG-13. We're going all out, right?
Yeah.
Now, just to kill the rumors, nobody ever had a problem with the violence and with the rating.
Okay.
Ever.
Oh. I was gonna ask you about that.
Never.
So it's always going to be a hard R.
That kills a theory that I had. Because this movie, to me, had the feeling of, they said to you, we want the darkest, edgiest thing, and you went, okay, and they saw it and went, oh my God, what did she do? So they wanted that from the get-go. Yeah.
They never said anything about the violence. I ran everything by them, as you have to, as a first time. So, you know, actually, to be honest, you know, not a lot of, in the entire film, those violent scenes, they're not from me. They're from the comic book.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The only thing I came up with is those parkour guys getting shot.
That is one of my favorite scenes in the entire movie. For those of you who have not seen this film, they're McGinty and the Urban Free Flow Gang.
That's right.
And they are constantly on a meth high, and they just do parkour to transport themselves everywhere. Like they're never not doing it. They leave through the roof.
They're never on the sidewalk, I think. They're like those monkeys that live in the rainforest and they never actually touch the ground.
They jump into frame and they jump out.
Hoopa! Hey!
And they're like this real crazy gang, and there's a scene in the movie where the Punisher, in the middle of one of their parkour routines, just shoots a grenade at him, and the guy just blows up in midair.
It looked like a heat-seeking rocket, because the rocket seeks him out in midair and blows him up. At the screening I went to, that got a standing ovation.
Oh, that's an amazing scene.
The way that came about is, I had a friend who said, you know, we were talking about what I'm doing at Punisher and the rewrites, and the studio wanted to hire another 6 writers, and I'm like, oh my God, I can't. And they're like, look, just promise me one thing. Don't you fucking dare cast any parkour guys and put parkour guys in, because everybody's doing that. And there were like 3 movies, I think Hulk and Die Hard, and everybody had parkour guys.
Oh,
and
yeah,
was
that's
like,
right.
There's a big parkour like thing.
And then there was a reverse reaction. And then I heard it again from somebody, just don't put any parkour guys in there. I'm like, what's with this reverse reaction to them? I'm kind of liking that.
Yeah.
What can we do? And I thought, let's just blow them up, you know? If people hate them so much, I kind of figured, you know.
It was an amazing scene, because it's gratifying on 2 levels, because it's like, oh, that's cool parkour, but then you get that scene that you want. Just,
It was like the movie's way of saying, other movies, they introduce the parkour guys, and as a movie, you go, okay, this will be the final battle.
Exactly.
And they just go, no, they're dead.
Yeah.
Screw that.
Not only are they dead, but they've been blown in. But they don't exist. Their bodies are no longer
here. There's an amazing scene, because the Punisher shoots one of them in both kneecaps, and he falls down, and he gives the Punisher the information about where the rest of the gang is going, and you think, oh, he's not going to kill this guy. And then, like, the next cut to, he's been dropped from a roof and impaled. It's like, ah, it's so great. The Punisher does not go soft. He is never yet. No one's escaping the wrath.
I don't know if you read the Punisher comic books,
but that was
taken out completely. Like, that scene of him being impaled was shot by shot. And we did a lot of that. Like, the one you love, where the guy shoots, you know, having the kid on the shoulder, and then shoots the guy, and the other cop goes, no!
That's an amazing scene.
It's taken directly out of the comic book. We did that a lot. You know?
And the guy, I just love that the cop isn't shocked and horrified. He's annoyed.
Annoyed.
Like, he literally is going, he reacts as if, all right, I figured you would do this. Right. I was just hoping just once you wouldn't do
this. I think
that's how he reacts.
We should, because I think it's such a fun, great scene. He's like, oh, God damn it, yeah. Castle.
Oh,
like, it's like,
man.
It's really, this again?
Yeah, again.
Now?
Yeah.
Now, you were talking about the writers. I read online that Kurt Sutter, the guy who wrote Sons of Anarchy, like, mm-hmm. did he have a draft of this at one point?
Yes, you know, that was another, you know, it's so funny sometimes. It really is like high school, you know, because yeah. there's so many parties and then they get kind of against each other. You know, I'm a Kurt Sutter fan.
Right,
you know,
yeah.
I like yeah. his show. I like his writing. You know, when I was up for this movie, I only got one script, which is the Nick Santora script.
Okay.
Now, I never knew Nick, but I read the script and I thought, okay, he kind of, again, he was the first one to really embrace this ridiculousness. He came up with Looney Bin Jim, you know?
Oh,
and
Looney
that's
Bin
really
Jim.
The only...
We'll get to him in a minute.
See, yeah. I think he was a great character. I didn't want to have any characters that ran in the comic book, but he was so written so great that
yeah.
I thought we have to keep him. And Nick Santora's script, I liked it. It was basically what I want to do, like that ridiculous, let's celebrate the B-movies of the 80s kind of craziness,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah. A lot of those crazy direct-to-video action
Correct.
Things where they go, well, we don't have stars and a budget, but mm-hmm. one thing we can give people
is yeah.
nothing but what the fuck moments.
Well, and what's amazing was like, about this movie too is like the pace of it doesn't, like you said, the finale's in the first 3 minutes.
Yeah.
But the
yeah.
pacing of it is amazing. Like it doesn't go through a 10-minute, 15-minute like lapse. Like you get
no.
on board and you stay on board the entire time.
Well, yeah. I do these crazy things and people always look at me like I'm insane, but when I start a movie, I do these literally, like, I have a pacing schematic on, you know,
yeah.
how long
what?
Until, yeah, I have a, it actually impressed the president of Marvel, Kevin Feige, was like, shit, she has a schematic.
he's impressed with just a graph.
Damn.
I have a thing where I, like, you know, figure out how long the movie goes without any action happening. Because if
right.
you're making an action film, you better not have 20 minutes without any action.
Exactly, which is
know?
A mistake that most of these movies make, where you
right.
sit in this, like, exposition and dialogue. And a movie like this, you want to see nonstop action. I think the way I felt watching this movie was the way I felt when I saw Shoot 'Em Up, that movie with Clive Owen. Yeah,
yeah.
Which was like that same, like, just that, and it's like that fun.
We will get exposition in action. People
yeah.
will be
yeah.
moving and explaining what's going on very quickly because
yeah.
this maniac is coming
yeah.
after
I
them.
I feel like the Punisher himself only had like a page of dialogue.
He did, like,
yeah.
which, you know, which he embraced. He liked it, you know. But to come back to
yeah.
the scripts, you know.
Yeah.
Kurt Sutter's version that he wanted to do was a more like reality-based Punisher.
Okay.
And I think that kind of gets to the point why, you know, when you go on Amazon and you see, like, I always think, wow, this movie has so many great reviews. But then it also has a lot of, I hate this, this was the worst movie I've ever picked up.
Right.
It is either the greatest comic book movie ever done or the worst piece of shit on the planet.
Okay? Well, I think that the difference is like people... The wrong people are watching it. Like I think the people who are like a lot of the reviews I read were like, you know, I wasn't expecting this to be so violent. It's like, well, the movie is called The Punisher,
yeah.
man.
And I guarantee you the person that wrote that was like, this Punisher movie is going to be so badass. And then they actually were given what they wanted.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if I want it to be this.
Yeah, because you
yeah.
do. It's like I was saying that there's almost a. You just don't know what or who or when people are going to get killed, so
yeah.
you're in a constant state
yeah.
of like, who's going to get stabbed, who's going to get stabbed?
There's no solid ground
yeah.
for you to go, anyone can be killed at any moment.
Any moment.
Yeah.
And what you did so well, too, is the way that people die is amazing. And I think you're right, talking about like the reality-based script, I think that would be less... fun because you can do stuff like punch a hole through somebody's face.
Well, I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, to be honest, you know, I kind of wish they would do another one and do
right.
Kurt Sutter's version, and because it could work, because there was a lot of people who wanted the Punisher more reality-based. Now,
okay.
I will never be able to understand it. I would never be able to direct something like this because, to me, a guy running around with a skull on the front based in reality, I needed it to be fantasy.
Yeah.
yeah.
I also, to be honest, don't want a Virginia Tech guy running around thinking he's the Punisher. Like,
yeah.
I wanted it to be, you know, and the look was great for it, too, because I wanted it to be the most brutal Alice in Wonderland type
yeah.
kind
yeah.
of,
yeah.
you
it's
know?
Beautiful.
Well, that's why you don't see him before he's a Punisher at all. I mean, we see him in flashbacks a little bit, but, like, we're not taking on this
no.
journey for how
no.
he got there. We don't have any relationship to this family.
Right.
You know, we're just there.
And the humor in this movie is amazing. The character Jigsaw, played by Dominic West, who you may know from The Wire, You know, he gets into a fight with the Punisher, falls into a glass recycling machine.
Yeah. Well, that's where gangs have their shootouts, at big glass recycling plant. They're very green. They're very green.
They're always recycling that glass.
Yeah.
And you know, his face is put back together by his doctor in record time.
When he falls into the glass grinding machine, never screams, "Help me," or "Oh, no," just...
Fuck you,
Castle. Fuck you. Just as he's being grounded, never regrets. Again, just angry at Castle. Oh, great. Now I got to go through a glass grinding machine. Asshole.
Well, the same thing when he's revealed, but his face is finally revealed. He's been put back together in roughly a quick amount of time. And,
next day.
And he's so mad at the results. But they described him, the doctor's like, "Look, your face was ripped off. There is nothing. There is no bone. There is no tissue." It's like, who gives a fuck? Let me see it. And so he has his face, and then he proceeds to stab that guy in the head with a pair of scissors.
And then one of his underlings, as he's walking away, the younger guy makes a comment or throws up when he reveals his face for the first time. And then as him and the other thug are walking away, he says, "I can't believe you didn't control yourself, man." He's like, "You know how much he cares about his looks." I think anyone would be upset.
Yeah.
The man looks like Frankenstein. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought Dominic West did such... I just love Dominic, because I think once he said yes and he came, he kept asking me, "Really, this ridiculous, this great?" Yeah. I'm like, "Trust me, just go with it." And that's why he kind of doubted that's how insane he should go. But I kept saying, and that's why I always say in interview, "Listen, that wasn't his acting choice. That was mine. Like, I told him, just go." Because he often said, "Really? Yeah, you really?
That crazy?"
But he was such a fucking trooper. He's such a great actor. And for him to kind of... Am I even allowed to curse?
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah.
You know, he totally went with it. But here's another little, thing that I've never told anybody. Mm-hmm. I love Dominic, and I was glad he was in the movie, okay? But somebody came to audition. Now, here's the ticker of this whole thing. He was sent by one of the chairman... of Lionsgate, okay? Now, I thought, okay, well, now I guess we have to see this actor. And this actor was Freddie Prinze Jr., okay?
I gotta go.
But here's the thing, okay? So he comes in and he reads for Chixa. And I tell you what, he did the most amazing audition on the planet. He was
really
fantastic. And let me tell you another thing. He knew the Punisher inside out. He really had read them since he was a little kid, and he was amazing. Now, then I go turn around and say, "Look, Freddie Prinze was, I gotta give it to him. He did a fantastic audition." "Yeah, but you're not gonna cast him." "You made me see him." "Yeah, but you're not gonna cast him." So, you know, these were the kind of things that happened on your studio film. But see, this is the kind of thing that I find sometimes very strange, because frankly, they also could have gotten, I think there was another young director who really wanted this film, who was also obsessed with The Punisher.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not apologizing for the film I made, but sometimes I think, you know, there's people out there who breathe, live, eat this stuff.
Yeah.
Get them. Don't try to get John Dahl and then, he wanted too much money, let's get the
but
cheap one who's
perception,
hot.
But it's a lot of right? It's like, because, I mean, you're an Academy Award nominated person, and they don't want to pay John Dahl $1 million, so they want to get the prestige of having you, who you have this, like, you know, these great
critically
films.
Acclaimed movie beforehand, hot, and, you know,
All of which was killed in the moment of Punisher. The day after the box office came out, I was like, I guess that Academy Award is not doing me any good now.
But what do people expect, though? Because it's not, more than any other superhero movie, the Punisher is what he is. He goes and kills people. I mean, there's nothing, ultimately, I've read the comics, that's redeeming about him more. You know, it's like, that's what he is. And like,
even the other superheroes don't like him. They would very much like to lock him up with all the other villains. They're like, "Frank, please, we really don't know what your help right now. Thank you, but no thank you. This is really horrifying."
By the way, you know, Roger Ebert gave you like a good review, too. Robert Ebert,
I love Roger Ebert. He also loved Queen Street Hooligan. So I must be, you know, in his good grace. But there's a bunch of other reviews that I read way later that I thought, well, even a guy from San Francisco said, Lexi Alexander had B movie material, and she embraced it as much as she could and said, "Let's go all out with the B." And I thought, why did not more people get this? When I read, I did not know Patton before he wrote this. Okay, and somebody had forwarded me his review, And I was so touched. He wasn't the only one who said yay to this movie, but he got it. I was like, yes. I'm like, why is he not working for the marketing department? Why can't they consult him? Because all you had to tell people was, instead of pretending we're bringing this out on Christmas because it's just like Dark Knight. It's not, okay?
Yeah. No.
There were not $200 million. There was no Heath Ledger. There was no, you know, what's his name?
Christian Bale.
Correct. Yeah. You know, there was just, this was not what we were doing.
Yeah,
you know?
But what you did was you made a movie that looked great and embraced everything in a really fun way.
If this had been an end of the summer release, the way that they put out the first Blade, in late August,
yes.
Like, okay, all the big, bright, happy movies are out of the way.
Absolutely.
This is a dark, non-stop, in-your-face action movie. You know, like, that, yeah. It would have been so, that would have been the perfect time to put it out.
I agree
and
with
also,
you, yeah.
you told me this kind of terrifying story of how they screened it for critics, which is
right.
The absolute
well,
wrong
you
way.
Know, there's a lot of, like, people have this, you know, even Patton thought, oh, they wanted to, they straight out said, this movie's already dead, we're
right.
Going to kill it. But that wasn't necessarily the case, because they watched it, you know, you have the screening of the rough cut, basically,
yeah.
A little bit later than the rough cut, but it's not all finished, and you screen it for the entire Lionsgate people that will have anything to do with the release, distribution, marketing, all the heads, and standing ovations, laugh out loud, you know, the
yeah.
Parkour guys get shot, yeah, you know, laughing, but I'm like, okay, I guess this is cool, right?
They get the tone,
so
at least.
So they go and say, we actually, unlike any other movie we do of this genre, we will screen this for the critics.
Right.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow. And they,
so they
had,
never do that.
They had simultaneous screenings in New York and LA. Now, 2 days before, I'm panicking because I'm thinking, wait a minute, a New York critic, think about this.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm
at
talking
Christmas
about...
Christmas time.
Right, I'm talking... Right.
Jesus is
right.
About to be born.
So I thought, oh, I'm so screwed.
Yeah.
And I called him up. I remember this. I said, couldn't we at least... There's one guidelines... you know, I have to say, of course, I argued with them a lot the closer the release got, because I kept thinking this is not going right. Because I knew who were people like you who said would stand on the chair.
Yeah.
And they didn't know it was coming out. So I thought something is not going right. So I became this whole devil of the arguing directors, and it was a bad choice on my part, but anyway, I wanted to fight for the movie. And so I said 2 days before, I said, can't we at least put a one sheet on the seat that shows that we have taken every scene, every violent scene, every action scene from the comic book, and even Steve's look, you know, I mean, he shot it beautifully the way the comic book looked.
Amazing. Oh.
Can we just at least show them? So even though they're not comic book fans, they will not get what this is.
Yeah.
They'll understand the effort that was made based on the source material.
Right.
That's a ridiculous idea. No, we're not doing that. So what ended up in every paper, I never forget this. This actually had affected me at all. You know, I did a little film since then. It's the only thing I've done. I've done a little film, which my friends call Lexi's Christian film. Because here's why. I like the film, but I think I did go a little bit too far to the other. A woman in New York, I think it was even the New York Times, wrote this in her review. I think she wrote, Lexi Alexander should go to prison for her violent imagination. Now, mind you, okay, and she was talking about the impaling and mind you, I didn't come up with it.
Yeah.
It's in the damn comic book. But see, that's the thing. Like, people thought we just had some kind of sadistic jerk-off session, you know,
well,
and not knowing that it was based
on
something.
I think that there are probably, in my mind, this movie is so much more fun to watch than the Saws and the stuff like that. Which
I can't watch any of that.
Because, you know, that's the stuff that's like, oh, it's like, there is no fun in it. Like, a movie like Kick-Ass, which is also incredibly violent and fun, but it's fun to watch. And that's a very tough line to, I think,
and
pull
it's also,
off.
This isn't weird, like, lingering fetishistic violence. There is violence, but we keep zipping along. It's like, it reminds me of the violence in movies like The Road Warrior, where, I mean, it stings, but we're not going to sit here and just linger.
And
ooh, let's slowly watch,
you
know.
You don't see people in that much pain, with the exception of...
They die pretty quickly.
They die pretty quickly. Or the Punisher shoots them.
Yeah, with the exception of Jigsaw, who, although even he kind of, it's like, sort of has a comment. Like,
yeah, you want Jigsaw to die at that point.
He should have a horrible life at that point. But even like, again, it's getting back to Ebert's review too, it does look, and I just shot a movie with your DP, Steve Gaynor, it is such a, I think another thing that disturbed people must have been, it is a weirdly gorgeous movie. So I don't think people could put together the two thoughts ahead that I want looking at such a gorgeous movie and it's so horrifying.
Well, and to me, I also think, I always think that a lot of reviewers are older too. Like, this is not a movie for a 50 something, you know, or 60 something year old, you know, like, I did a movie called Piranha 3D and like, and you know, and like, and
you're welcome, America.
And enjoy. And, you know, and June's dad saw it and he didn't even want to, that he saw it because he was so mortified.
My father never brought it up to me and said that when I brought it up to him, I finally asked him to see Piranha 3D. He's like, I can't ever speak to Paul about it. That's...
But, you know, those are sometimes the people that are reviewing movies. They're just not... Like, you have to be in the right mindset. The movie isn't for...
But I think you can get to them. If you explain to them what we were doing and saying, I know you're not in your private life want to watch this. You want to watch Slumdog Millionaire and you want to watch those kind of movies. I get it, okay? But there's a whole... You know, I always say this about... You know, I'm not going to put any Thomas Kinkaid stuff up in my house, okay? But guess what? Thomas Kinkaid stuff sells a lot. Because America actually has a lot of other states. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, definitely.
Don't, it's not only your taste. Like, but I think you would have gotten to them. I think if you would have explained to them, you're not in this genre, but this is what we did, I think they would have at least appreciated, for example, Steve's work. They would. Yeah.
Well, the way that you talked about putting the one sheet down on the chairs, that seems like a genius idea.
Well, let me tell you something about another movie I just saw. Patton is in a great movie called Harold and Kumar 3D.
I haven't seen that yet.
Okay, but here's what I know, just because I know somebody who worked on it as well. I saw a kind of secret trailer that the young director had cut himself. You know, now I'm somebody who would never go see a Harold and Kumar movie, okay? I saw this trailer and I said, I would go. I would go and see this film just because this was so genius. It was so kind of self-deprecating, very, very funny. I'm in on the joke. It's ridiculous to have Harold and Kumar in 3D, like, you know, all of this stuff. It was just like pure talent. And I was like, oh my God, I hope they're using this trailer. And of course they're not, okay?
Oh, man.
But if they would have just taken this kid's instinct who lived this film for a year, okay? If they would have gone with it, they would get more people in the movie.
But that's what Robert Rodriguez does. Robert Rodriguez like cuts his own trailers and then releases them himself because he knows, I'll get to my people that will like this. Because
and they'll see my enthusiasm for the thing I just did.
Well, it is always such a strange thing that like marketing departments are so cut off from the rest of the studio. Like, they work on their own lot, it seems.
Well, I mean, to go up to the Piranha thing, too, like, we were supposed to screen at Comic-Con, like, a little clip, and had nudity in it, and it was too bloody. Like, well, you have to pull this away. And our director, Alex Aja, was like, no, I'm not going to, I will not, like, dilute what I'm going to do. I'm going to screen it off campus. And so they rented a movie theater for him. And then all those fans came, and I think that positive word of mouth bred from there because he didn't compromise what it is. You have to, like, appeal to the right people.
Can you imagine if they had done the invite-only midnight screenings, like, a couple months before this movie came out to the right people? Then the word would be like, hey, dude, I just saw this thing. If you think the Thomas Jane Punisher movie was hardcore, wait till you see this thing. And like, then people would have gone.
I think you're right.
A lot more people would have gone.
Now, what did you not get to do anything that you wanted to do in this movie? Were there things that
you know, the only thing really creatively, to be honest, everybody was on board. You know, I think Marvel kind of, it's funny because I had a really good relationship with Kevin Feige and I'm a big fan. I thought it was very smart, but I think they kind of stayed out of it because Lionsgate paid for it.
Got it.
Once in a while, there was this weird, like, and I made mistakes too. There was this weird kind of, they're the divorced parents, and I'm going to use one against the other when I don't like the idea.
Right.
You know, like,
right.
I kind of thought, okay, you know, like, but so, and my mistake. But for most part, Marvel kind of stayed out of it. And, you know, there was one thing. I had a soundtrack on it that kind of reflected what this movie was, okay?
Right.
it wasn't an orchestra.
Right.
It was kind of ridiculous. You know, it was good, but it was more up to what this tone of this movie was. They pulled it off, fired my composer, and put one on, which I'd later found out the direction to this composer was make it more like Dark Knight. And again, saying...
A serious, somber...
But you hear it now, like that symphony stuff sometimes. I mean, it doesn't... It's not too bad, but I thought, oh, what we had... I wish I could show it. I may have still a rough cut somewhere with it. Because it was this really kind of edgy, you know, it's the kind of music Frank Castle he has. More like Chemical Brothers, you know, elevated, R-rated, you know, so.
Which, by the way, and then the Chemical Brothers, they let them do the soundtrack to Drive.
Exactly.
Which made that movie work so well.
And I have to say, I was thinking about Drive when I saw this movie, because there are similarities in this, know, this dark guy. And Drive is the realistic Punisher in a way,
it's just as stylized in its own way and just as brilliantly and also we were talking about this too because I'm also gonna ask if we can now can me and June and Paul just start asking you about our favorite scenes and have you just want to start firing questions but
stuff.
Because there's so much
I know there's so,
there's a lot to unpack.
I love that this is one of the few superhero movies that especially in terms of the Punisher, where Ray Stevenson, the lead character, looks like a guy who lives in the sewer and eats processed food
MREs.
Out of a box. Yeah, just does not. I mean, he's not fat, but he's not in shape, and he's got this huge armor thing on. And there's a scene when he's just running, and he just looks like this huffing, angry tank.
Right.
Like you realize that. A real-life Punisher would learn, how can I kill the most people with the least amount of movement or effort on my part?
But like, he's
that's
not going
so
to
scary.
The gym. Yeah.
No, but
I
that's
did note
so
that when he was
him.
Running. It
the
was
running
more like
funny.
A stomp down the street. And he's got to get back to that lair pretty quick.
He's carrying a lot of weight on him.
Yeah.
The vest. I did have a question. So just to go back to that Marvel thing, is that why Stan Lee didn't appear? Is that the only Marvel film that Stan Lee has not appeared in?
No, I don't think we... I think at some point we asked, we said, oh, we should have him appear, but then we were in Montreal. Listen, this was a tough shoot. This was
How many days did you shoot? Yeah,
no day, just 40 nights.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
It was an all night.
No
and
day.
Let me tell you something else.
Whoa.
We go to Montreal and they say, oh, we don't have any heavy winters. And then it's 20 degrees zero, okay? I mean, like they all say, we never had a winter like this. It was below zero every night. And we were in locations that were toxic, you know? Like, I mean, it was just, you know, I think that's...
It looks like it... There are scenes that look like they smell bad. And I'm meaning that as a compliment. You're just like, wow, I hope they have face masks on.
That last scene we had to wear back... You know that, basically, you know, when you start, like you said, when you start with a scene where somebody's head gets cut off so quickly.
And an old lady's head gets twisted around. Just does he kill her just because she's having dinner with people he doesn't like?
No,
like,
I
it's
know.
So good. What
yeah, because
she
was
for?
The scene before she was sent out of the room along with that other woman.
Yes.
It seemed like they didn't they weren't
were just,
doing any business.
They were just having dinner. They were just having dinner and they were killed. But I also feel bad for the Alzheimer's grandmother too.
Oh my
whose
God.
Whose head is
but
like,
that was Looney Bin Chim and he kills everything.
Yeah.
And it looked like a quick death.
Yeah, Paul, everyone listening
sorry.
That was Looney Bin Chim.
She was watching her cooking shows.
Totally justified.
Well, yeah, no, that last when I just said, okay, we've killed so many people, how do you now have a finale? That's not anticlimactic.
Yeah. How many people did you kill?
Okay, and by the way, so can I just say this is my favorite scene in this movie, okay?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. It'll surprise you, but I basically had to come up with this finale, and I thought, okay, now he has to kill a million people, okay?
Yeah.
So how do I get them? And I thought, oh, there's all these gangs in the comic books. Let's do a... And I don't know if you caught this, but when Jigsaw and Looney Bin Chim do this whole speech to recruit these gangs, okay, that was a direct spin-off of that scene in Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11 when these two doofus recruiters come to the high school.
Oh, yeah.
Did you catch that? No, that put them
right
in.
We can actually play it right now. We can listen to it. Here,
well, I mean, I got the gross neon American flag.
Yeah.
It looked like a nightmare version, but you took it from the Michael Moore.
Well, because when I saw that movie, that was kind of like I thought, okay, who listens to these doofus guys who come and say, sign up your life, it'll be great. You
he
know, you may die, but...
He goes to, like, the black gang, the Asian gang, and the Irish gang.
And they each have neon symbols of their ethnicity behind them on the wall, which I love.
And they all have to go team up and go to this hotel to...
I gotta say, they're... they're being recruited for. I mean, they're being given money, but their task is really, along with tons of other people, to just kill one man. Like, and I also, feel like I might sign up.
But you know, I mean, yeah. Do you get that? That was like, I mean, when this whole thing. I happen to be a liberal. Okay. So when this whole thing started off, let's start a war and get after Osama bin Laden. And I thought nobody's going to buy that, right? And then right. All of a sudden, you're like, holy shit, people are literally enlisting, you know? And so I thought, okay, I put my own little... Some people noticed it. Uh-huh. Others, it kind of went... They couldn't think politically, but anyway, well, so that was my favorite.
June, you were pointing out, yeah, they are being recruited to kill one guy, but they're also... pretty openly being recruited to be cannon fodder.
Correct.
Like he's all, because once they get to the hotel, the way that he must have said, okay, Irish guys, you're on the first floor.
Yeah.
Black guys, you're on the second floor. Chinese guys, you're on the, and then he's, this maniac is going to chew his way through you.
Just
eyes.
Go up. We figured him, yeah. He,
and I'll be on the top floor. And none of them went, wait a minute. So we're on the ground floor where he can just, so that's where we are. Okay, that's
it's
cool.
It's like a Titanic. What does that remind you of?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Well, let's talk about some of our favorite scenes before we kind of wrap up. I have some questions from our audience here,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think my favorite scene in the movie is the scene where Dominic West, who's Jigsaw at this point, looks at himself in the mirror and his face is all messed up and he gets very emotional and he says, you know, I can't look at myself in the mirror. And then Looney Bin Jim goes, don't worry about it, you'll never have to look in a mirror again, and then proceeds to hurl his body into mirror, like in this mirrored room, breaks
lots
every
mirrors
mirror
in there.
And Dominic West is I don't know if at that point if Dominic West's character is just insane because he's had all this intense plastic surgery, or he's or just loving his brother. Like, I love that relationship between...
It was genuinely beautiful.
It was a great scene. Like, his brother's like, I'm going to break every mirror so you never have to look at yourself again. That is my favorite scene. I love that scene.
I want to ask, what is Looney Bin Jim's diagnosis? Like, what is he...
be Dr. Phil for a second.
Yeah.
Walk through him.
Clinically insane, I would say. You know, okay. I mean...
He makes Hannibal Lecter look tame, by the way.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, Doc Hutchison, you know, ends up, like, passing on the script.
Yeah.
And I immediately called his agent. I said, I need his personal number, you know. And I called him up at home and I said... okay, honestly, you cannot pass. I will stalk you.
Right.
You know, I have been such a huge fan of his. He's one of those underappreciated, although now he's on a reality show, which kind of stinks.
Well, because didn't he kind of go crazy a little bit? Did you send a 15-year-old intern to give him the script again? Maybe? I'm sorry.
Yeah,
it's so funny because I have so much respect for his acting, and another one of those guys that I think really never got, you know, you watch The Green Mile, you can watch
it. He should have gotten an Oscar for that.
Yeah, he's amazing.
You know, I just think he never got that, but you know, I knew he can be as creepy as they come, you know. But he can also play it in. Yummy, yummy, yummy in my tummy, tummy, tummy.
Yes,
he made that up.
Yummy, yummy,
that was not written.
He made that up.
Well,
we played that
in the teaser because the way he delivers those words is so scary.
Let us hear it.
Yummy, yummy in my tummy, tummy, tummy.
So great.
He came up with that.
This is a question
that actually someone wrote here. Kyle Brown wrote. Was Doug Hutchins' meow in the movie? Was that his choice or is that in the script?
His choice. You know, I'm actually big. If you watch Green Street, it's kind of ridiculous to talk about it on the Punisher, really. But if you watch Green Street, you know, there's a lot of stuff that gets praises that the actors came up with. And I'm big on that. If I fight for a good actor, when I do have a good actor and they make suggestions, you know, I'm an idiot if I don't take them.
Right.
And he's one of those. He's one of those. He'll come on set and say, Lexi, what do you think of this, you know? And he'll do this meow thing, and you go like, he's fucking insane, but I love it, you know?
He's a great character in this movie.
Dominic West as well. And
yes,
so
Dominic West, great.
Ray Stevenson did a lot of that. Like, I mean, he did.
I was surprised, I guess, that Jigsaw, for caring so much about his brother, was fine with him being treated in such a horrible asylum. Like, that looked like the worst. I was like, can we throw some mob money this guy's way?
Also, I had a problem with that doctor. That doctor could have been abusing him more, but just eating his applesauce.
Yeah, like that's his idea of abuse.
Yeah, I'll eat some of your applesauce.
I gotta say, I think that fat people in this movie took a hit.
That elevator operator in the hotel,
who doesn't
seem to be armed at all at the end of the movie. He's just sitting in an elevator thing, and he opens up, and he sees...
Well, he was smoking in there.
Oh, shit. Like, he just knows. He gets pretty blown away.
You know what? Yeah. I don't think that was an actually conscious choice. I think that.
Well, you are a former karate champion, though, Lexi. Maybe you have it out for fat people. If people aren't fit, like, let's kill them. Let's kick a hole through their chest.
I don't think so. No, it just happened. By the way, I had my own fat days, and you know? Probably the week after the box office, did see the pounds of skin. But no, I think that they were just presented to me as, and you know, the asylum. I always thought he had no choice. Like, I always thought it was one of those asylums that people who kill people get in.
Oh,
you know,
I see. Oh, okay. He was a criminal.
Okay, he was in prison. Okay.
Yeah. My favorite scene. This is how when you talk about the pacing. A breather in the middle of the finale, the huge gunfight. This movie's version of a lull is where Frank Castle puts a grenade in a paint can, kicks it in another room, and then this guy that he's fighting with then looks down and sees that it's a grenade, and his reaction is literally like, oh, great. Like, it is, and it's this weird, like, all the sound goes out of the scene, all the music drops, and it's this quiet moment of his last moments on Earth going, oh, perfect. And then and then we're right back into it. I hate to use this word, it's symphonic.
It's amazing.
It is the way that little, that was such, it, who, was that in the script? Were you, as you were mapping it out, like?
I don't want to take away anything from anybody. There's a lot of great choreographers. You know, my choreographer that I always work with, Pat Johnson, was there. There was a guy named Shaw Fanette who's famous. So everybody did their thing. I believe I wrote this. You know, I tried to come up with these moments like the parkour thing and the crate. And the how do you take violence and make it so ridiculous? That it's not, you know, some crazy kid doesn't. I didn't want the crazy kid to go, oh, that's who I want to be. I wanted it to be the kind of violence that makes you laugh. By the way, you would be very surprised, but I'm very, how do you say, squeamish. Like, I always, you know, tell John, tell me when it's over, you know, like, yeah. I wanted it to be very, very violent, but not realistic violent. Right. Like, and not cartoony violent, more like, oh, absurd, it's absurd,
it's
you
absurd.
Know?
It's absurd.
That is a weird moment, though, when that guy reacts that way, because in some ways, it's like, I don't know how I would react if that, like, there was a part of me that was like, I wonder if I'd have the same reaction.
Yeah.
Of just like, oh, fuck.
You know what? I'm done.
Yeah,
I'm done. What am I going to do? I might as well try to be cool about it.
Lexi, I don't know if you know this, but I have planned something here because a lot of people have asked about sequels and will there be another sequel. Did you know that Ray Stevenson reprised his role of the Punisher in a children's cartoon?
I did, actually.
Wait, what?
You have to hear it. We have the clip of it. It's on what's the name of the, Cyrus, what's the name of the cartoon? Do you know? It's a kid's cartoon on Cartoon Network. It's like called, like, it's a Marvel cartoon. You'll hear it. It's.
What?
Yeah, you got to hear this. It's pretty amazing.
Thanks, Punisher. We really appreciate this.
We're nothing but white blood cells, hunting the infection called crime. A sickness that sneaks in through the cracks. The way that Brussels sprouts sneak onto a plate of delicious macaroni and cheese. Sure, the city looks safe. Just push the Brussels sprouts to one side, right? Rawr! No matter where you put them, their vile vegetable juices corrupt the whole plate.
Oh.
I'm out here to keep those stinking sprouts off the mac and cheese. Keep them from leaving the store in the first place.
Then his van starts shooting all this stuff. He shoots, blows everybody up, and then he drops the Hulk off. Here, you'll see it. The van is just shooting bullets randomly. This is a kid's cartoon. They're all screaming. All right, here we go.
Your van smelled like dirty laundry anyway.
Hulk want mac and cheese.
All right, there you go.
Watch this. Wait.
Wow. Wow.
Oh,
by the way, more lines than he had in the movie.
way more lines.
Brussels sprouts.
That is called the Superhero Squad.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That's... But in a weird way, it's like they got your movie because it's that same level of... Satire,
you know, it's a funny thing, you know, a lot of people in the aftermath got the movie, which kind of like, you know, I always say to my friends, I wished I would have done a real, like, stinker, you know, like kind of like George Clooney embraces Batman and Robin and just goes on every talk show and apologizes for killing the franchise almost and for, you know, being shit in the film. And with this film, you know, I've tried to do this. I've tried to kind of like, when I was shooting this little film, Lifted in Alabama, a kid was apparently waiting for me for 12 hours.
Oh, wow.
To talk to me, okay?
Yeah.
And he came and said, oh, Miss Alexander, may I talk to you in a southern accent? And he said, I'm a huge I'm a huge Punisher fan. I saw it 20 times. And I said, and now you want your money back, right? So I was just making a joke. And he almost cried. And, you know, and little did I understand, he's a huge fan. He just came back from Afghanistan, okay? He that was like his thing. They were all talking about it there. And you kind of like, I thought to myself, you know, there's people who like this film. I can't
absolutely.
Just slap them in the face. And so it's a weird thing because you don't know. I don't know if I should apologize or if I should be mad that it didn't happen.
You need to
wait
a decade and this thing will be like Office Space and Big Lebowski. I'm telling you, that's what I think.
I always collect a bunch of like the positive reviews of the movies here. And a little segment we have, like a second opinion. Mm-hmm. So these are people who have reviewed their movie on their own terms. So here you go. These are some of them. Chili goes, any moron who gives this film less than 4 stars not obviously has any comprehension of what makes things good. Why even write an opinion on it? You can suck on a muzzle of an M18. Zaboom! End your life. 4 stars.
End your life.
The jester writes,
signed Pauline Kael's ghost.
This is the best movie I've ever seen. If I had any money, I would buy it. The jester.
Does he mean buy it on DVD or the actual print and everything that was? That's crazy.
I think he just wants to buy it. Maybe just buy a DVD.
Yeah.
Oh man. And then this guy just writes, this is my favorite review from Kool-Aid. He goes, this is a really nice movie to watch. That was the review. It's a really nice movie to watch.
On a rainy Saturday, you know, put it on by the fire.
Do you know how many kills were in the movie? I saw one a stat online, but do you have?
I don't.
81 confirmed kills by just the Punisher. That's what it is.
Oh, my God.
That is what someone calculated on Wikipedia.
Well,
81.
Just the Punisher.
Just, and those are confirmed. Those aren't people who be maimed.
Yeah, That's why I did that little Christian movie.
What do you have coming up? Are you working on anything right now? Or
I was just telling Pat, and I'm being very masochistic because I'm not, you know, my career is not enough in the cellar yet. Right. So I decided to pass on every, because, you know, there's actually fans of this movie.
Right,
and so I do get scripts sent, you know, but, you know, every script now has 50 people dying on page one with machetes, you know.
Right.
And so I kind of made a decision, as much as I'm tempted, I'm not going to do it, you know. I'm going to, you know, I look back at Queen Street and Johnny Flinton, and I think what people liked about it was, yes, they were violent, and there was some violence in it, but it had heart. And so now I'm, you know, I'm kind of waiting. Either something like this comes, and what I really do is I'm focusing on TV, which... If you know anything about TV, they hate feature people, let alone feature people who had box office bombs. So it's really masochistic because I keep... But I, you know, funny, one of the executives I worked the most with in TV, first meeting I had with him, and I was surprised he took a meeting with me. He's pretty big, you know. But then he says, okay, hold on a second. I have to put you on speakerphone. Well, I had to get on the speakerphone with his son, who's in Santa Barbara College, and all of his dorm mates, because they're the biggest Punisher fans. So see what happens? Like, they were all like, oh, my God, you know. And so, you know, I'm working my way through TV and hoping that people will forget this happened, you know.
I know you say you're trying to get away from the violence. If you should direct Sons of Anarchy episodes.
Yeah.
That would be amazing. If they let you do it.
You know, I don't
think
Kurt Sutter is a... You know, look, I made the decision. I went with the Nick Santoro script.
Right.
You know, I don't think Kurt Sutter is a fan. But, you know, there's other TV... And, you know, directing TV is a little bit different because, you know, the people have asked me, and the thing is kind of you don't do much as a TV director, you know, because I think people are sad in a way.
You're the producer of the show.
I wouldn't mind doing it, but that's not like, you know, this is not what I left, you know, Europe for, to be here and, you know, come... And just stand and let the main actor, you know, do his thing. Like, that's not... I write every day. I keep, you know, I actually am writing one feature screenplay that is martial arts, you know, so who knows? Maybe I'll actually send it out, you know?
Well, this has been awesome talking to you, and I hope if anybody listening, if you have not seen it, you have to see this movie.
Everything she revealed, I didn't know either.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And I hang out with her, and I didn't know that stuff, so wow.
Wow.
This yeah, is, I yeah. thought, you know, if I come here and if I do this, I've never done this, but Patton could ask me to literally videotape and direct his daughter's dance recital, and I would do it. I love him so much. So
how many kills do you think
time.
Would be in that one? Like 25
yeah,
or...
Like, well, how old is she? Yeah, because it depends.
Well, now, if you're listening to this today, which is the 3rd...
Yes, it's going to be coming out Monday, right?
Monday. Tomorrow night at the New Beverly, me and Lexi and the cinematographer... Steve Gaynor will be there doing a Q&A afterwards. Steve Gaynor, who's the guy who shot this movie, it looks like Black Narcissus. It looks like a Michael Powell film. It's so
yeah,
gorgeous.
It's beautiful.
It's disturbingly beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm so bummed that I will not be in L.A. to be a part of that, because I feel like seeing this movie in a theater would be the way to see it. Like
watching this with other people around you and hearing people go, did that just...
Yeah. It's a movie that you have to look at something and go, what the
hell? Paul and I probably watched it under the worst circumstances at like 7:30 a.m. because we both were trying to
I already watched it. And I watched it again.
I was drinking coffee. Like, the shades were down. It's just not the time you want to ever see any type of movie. And we had a blast. So
It's such a fun movie. Lexi, thank you so much for coming. Get yourself to New Beverly if you're in L.A. I think you would be an idiot to miss it. You'd be like Looney Bin Jim. You'd be just plain crazy. Mm-hmm. Thank you guys.
You'd be a dummy in your tummy.
Tummy.
See what I did?
Tummy.
But before we go, let me also remind you to check out earwolf.com, your home for all your Earwolf needs. We have shirts here on the show. They're called Ridiculous Cage shirts. We talk about them all the time. Picture of Nick Cage screaming. Look great on anybody that has a human torso. So if you have a human torso, get yourself a Nick Cage shirt and an iPhone app. That's right, Earwolf has an iPhone app. It's really good. I think out of all the podcast apps, this is my favorite. And I'm not saying that because I work at Earwolf. You can also follow myself on Twitter. I am at Paul Scheer.
At Miss June Diane.
And, of course, Patton is at Patton Oswalt. And check out this week's season premiere of The League on FX and the season finale of NTSF SDSUV on Adult Swim at 12:15. So a premiere and a finale. Those are my plugs. Thank you guys so much, and we'll see you next time on How Did This Get Made?
This has been an Earwolf Media production. Executive producers Jeff Ulrich and Scott Aukerman. For more information, visit earwolf.com.
Earwolf Radio, boom.com. The wolf dead.
Hey guys, it's Ashir
and Nicole
from Best Friends.
Our podcast has been out for a few months.
If you haven't listened to it,
you should.
We've already asked the big questions in life.
Imagine if we could lay eggs.
Okay, sure. I guess we...
Wouldn't that be funny if you could eat from yourself?
No, because that's like cannibalism.
Not when you eat yourself.
What?
Hmm?
Answer listener questions.
Hi, Nicole and Sashir. What happens if Sashir dies first? I mean, I've never thought of it.
Well,
I would be so sad.
Oh, no, Nicole. I'm not gonna die.
Take BuzzFeed quizzes. Let's pick 8 foods and we'll give you a sex position to try.
Whoa.
This is wild.
Plus, we bring on other funny best friends to talk about their friendship.
I almost want to cry. I don't know why that really made me feel emotional, but
it's because it's pure to talk about friendship.
It's nice.
It's so nice.
It's like so rare to like articulate it, but she's always there for me. Like I think she's just somebody who
Oh, I love this. I love it so much.
Oh my God.
It's really sweet. Best Friends with Nicole Byer and Sashir Zameda is new every Wednesday.
On Stitcher,
Apple Podcasts,
Spotify, or wherever
you get your podcasts.
Listen.
Oh my God.